All right, guys, welcome back. Episode 34. 34. 34.
Yeah.
Right. Legion Podcast. Monumental.
It's a big one.
First and foremost, thank you guys for rocking with us. Thank you to the city of Houston.
Shout out to y'all.
Yeah, ball out there, man. The whole city came out. Shout out to Texas. We appreciate you.
The love was definitely felt. Shout out to everybody in Houston.
This is an exciting episode for us because we talk about, you know, business a lot. And we talk a lot of times, and just not just us in general, like you'll read stuff, you'll hear stuff about hard decisions that have to be made in business, right? Yeah. But it's one thing to read about something or to hear about something, but it's another thing to actually get it from, you know, the actual source. Yeah. So this is what this is. So we got Jabari Johnson here, and his story is pretty legendary. He went viral because he wrote a very interesting article about why he turned down $1 million.
He ended up in our DM.
Yeah, so I'm gonna give the quick backstory. So Jabari, we're gonna go into a lot of different things, but he's a Howard University alumni. Bison.
HU, you
know. The real
HU, right?
Yeah, the real HU. The real one. Not to be confused.
Shout out to Hampton, no, shout out to Hampton.
Yeah, I got to show him.
So he went to Howard, and then he started throwing these R&B parties, right? And
hip-hop parties at first.
Hip-hop. Yeah. Okay, he started throwing hip-hop parties. And then he noticed at the end of the party set, he would do R&B.
Yeah.
And then the R&B actually got a bigger crowd reaction than the hip-hop part, the rap part.
Before I let go. Oh, right? It's like,
if you hear that song in the party, man. Listen.
Two things about that happen.
If you hear that song in the party, you already know. I went to school in Baltimore, so that was like a legendary, like 155, like put that song on. It's like, that had to happen. Yeah. But, all right. So he started, did that, and then he realized the traction with the R&B. So then he started doing R&B only parties, right?
Shows.
We might have to define the distinction.
R&B only shows, and then that just kind of just took off. And then he started doing like bigger and bigger venues, right? And if you're familiar with like EDM, right, where we're at now with DJs, and some DJs get paid more than entertainers, right?
A lot of DJs,
like these EDM sets, they'll have like 50,000 people come with no performers. Yeah. It's just a DJ, kind of like a hype man situation, and they just play the music and it's just a vibe. And he created that with the R&B, right? So then he started that. So he started a company called Colors Worldwide, and then he started R&B only, which is that, the R&B kind of show. It's an R&B show, right? Yeah. With no performance. Sometimes you have performance, but it's not built with performance.
Exactly.
It's just built with just the music. Mm-hmm. And that blew up.
Yeah. you called it EDM with turned into music that is baby making music.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you started going on tour. Mm-hmm. And then you got offered $1 million and you turned it down. Now you're doing festivals. There's a whole lot going on. So, first and foremost, thank you for joining us.
Oh, welcome, thank you guys for having me, man. I'm a big fan of the podcast, like we were saying. And
you got 914 ties.
Yeah. 914 ties, man. Sure. Shout out to, the whole upstate.
So we're going to talk about the business, but before we were talking about the details of the business, I want to talk about the beginning, because a lot of times people have ideas, right? But the hardest part for me and for anybody is the first step, right? Mm-hmm. So you had an idea that you want to start doing these shows, right? And you're young when you first started. You're still young now, but like, what's the first step that you took to get this off the ground and up and running?
Yeah, so I'll give you two first steps. I'll give you the first step of starting like just a company in general, Colors Worldwide, and then I'll tell you the step of R&B only. So I knew that I could start doing like small events, because when I was at Howard, we did like a me and my friends, and I was kind of took the lead on it, but we did a party that was on a bus, like a party bus, right? And so it was like, we had to get a bunch of people to essentially buy tickets. It was really to chip in on the bus price, right? Yeah. And then we took, you know, we had a plan and we sort of took this route. And then I was like, because I was like a filmmaker, I was like videotaping everything, and I wanted to make this like cool video. And I want to do this like every time we would come back for like homecoming, because homecoming is like really big at Howard. That didn't pan out, but like it was like two times, and then we finished it. But when I saw that like that was like, I could gather these people, I could get people to like give money to something, and at the end of the day, like, it worked, and it had like, that's how people, they had a good time, and I had the proof to like, because I made this little 1 minute video as like, this is proof that it actually happened. I realized like, I could start to congregate people and get people to buy into an experience of mine, right? And so that's how, like, you know, eventually that would lead to like Colors. And then R&B Only, the way that started was really playing the music at the end and being like, whoa. And I asked the crowd. It was just that moment I had, like, I had the opportunity to do legitimate market research, right? Because I stopped the music and I said, hey guys, if I just did an R&B only event, would you guys come? And the crowd erupted. Hell yeah. They just went, you know what I mean? They went crazy. And that was the proof of concept. And then I did, you know, I said, okay, here's a show that I'm, you know, introducing. It's called R&B Only. And I made it free with RSVP. And that's important because I didn't just start charging people immediately, right? Like, I gave people the opportunity to come for free, but it really wasn't free. It was them giving me their email at the time, yeah, was an opportunity for me to communicate with them in the future and let them know about my future events. And so I think that was the way to do it. And it's starting small, you know, like the first R&B only we did was in a venue that maybe held 200 people. You know, it wasn't like, I didn't come out the gate like, let's go for a 1,000 cap, you know, concert venue. I did it in a very, very small bar. And then it grew rapidly shortly after that.
Yeah, so I was just saying, like, a lot of that is commendable, right? Just to go back, it's like, a lot of times kids think, like, I have to be the front of the stage, right? Like, I have to be the performer, right? You flipped that and said, like, I don't have to be the performer. I just have to be the curator of the crowd, right? Yep. Like, you are the MC on the stage.
Yeah, uh-huh.
So my thing is, like, when you realize that, what type of demographics were you looking for to come to R&B Only?
You know, at first I was just like, whoever wants to come to this thing, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I didn't have a specific idea of the demographic of people that I wanted in mind. What ended up happening was, after 6 months of sort of like doing it and like starting in three cities at first, then it expanding, I started to see, okay, these are the people that like this show. And that was primarily young, I would just say millennial Black and Latino women. It really depended on the makeup of the city that we were in. But I quickly realized, like, I thought that this was going to be something where, you know, men would love it because girls are coming here. And, like,
that's,
you know,
that's a Tupac theory, right?
Yeah. There's, you know, if there's a bunch of women here, men are going to come.
Right.
And we have a male fan base now, but our specific audience is definitely more female leaning. And so everything that we do within the show is with them in mind. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. So now that we know who our audience is, we know how to talk to our audience. So a lot of times when you see like our voice on social media or our voice in an email, there are subtle things that make you feel like it's a woman talking to a woman. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because that's who the primary audience is.
Yeah. Now that's dope. And I want to go back to what you said before. Is a lot of times we overcomplicate things, right? Business, the key to business is to keep it simple. So when you say like market research, the best market research is to ask your market, right?
Just ask the people.
So yeah. So you said, would you be interested? That's mm-hmm. no different from going on Instagram, putting a poll up in your stories. Mm-hmm. Hey, if I did a live podcast, would you guys be interested?
Yes
in
or
that?
No.
if we want to do a show about the music industry, is that a good idea? Sound off in the comments. Like, this is perfect way, right? Like, yeah. It's not, you're going to pay $1 million yep. for people to do all these analytics.
Yep.
You have the audience, yep. Ask them, ask a question.
Yep. And you know what? You know, I think that another thing that people miss is in terms of simplicity, right? And we were just talking about this with the name of your podcast, Earn Your Leisure, right? Like, you are talking about business moves and how to earn the ability to be able to relax, right? It's from working, right? Right. And when, you know, people now, R&B Only just like kind of rolls off the tongue. And so when you say it, it sounds like a brand. A lot of people know it. You know, we reach a lot of people and, you know, people, we're well known at this point, right? I always say like we're well known unknowns because like the culture knows about us, but like we're not known on like a corporate level just yet, right? Like there's a lot of people that are still within the music industry. It's because a lot of these people are dinosaurs, but you know, I digress. But who don't know about us, but in the beginning, for people to be able to know about us and know what it was and easily get people to come, look at the name, R&B only. It's like, we just play R&B music, bro. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, that's it. Easy.
No
like,
hidden agenda.
No, there's no, you know what I mean? Like yeah. now, granted, we do have like hip hop sets every once in a while to like break the monotony of just, you know, R&B music up. But yeah, it's simple. It's like, I know what this is. You know what I mean? It's not called like, you know, slow dance, you know, whatever. You know, you know the all these like names. Fancy, nah. Yeah, yeah. Nah, it's unnecessary.
That's actually a really good point. You gotta give it to them where they can understand it immediately.
Yep.
R&B only.
Yep. And
don't ask me what it is. Like, it's R&B only.
Here's the thing, like, because you're still going to get people who don't understand what it is because the concept is so new, right?
Yeah.
So that's another thing. It's like, you know, in our culture, we haven't had something where it's a show, but there's no performance essentially, right? Like when you say a show and it's at a venue that normal, you know, artists have concerts in, people are just like, what is this? Oh, you don't know how many people ask us, well, what is this? Is it a concert? Is it a this? Is it a that? And it's like, we have tons of videos showing you what it is. You know, we explain that it is a DJ-based experience, but still, people are still like, you know, a lot of people just are lazy and don't want to do research and, you know.
A lot of people don't have a brain. Because, like, even on our thing, like, we put, like, we do events and we're like, go to the event tab on our website. Mm-hmm. And people was like, how do I register?
Yo, oh, well, yeah, where do I go?
I just said it, literally, in the caption.
And, you know,
where y'all going
to
be next?
And it's to say this. It's to say, you know, people, like, because we get those type of comments, right? So, like, on our social media, you know, somebody will, you know, they'll tag their friends in a comment and say, like, hey, I want you to come with me to this. And then, like, you know, somebody will literally say, like, how much are tickets? And it's like, you just need to click the buy tickets link. You know what I mean? So, but this is the day and age we're living in, right? Yeah. Where, like, people don't want to go an extra mile and an extra inch, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't even say a mile.
Yeah, it's not a mile, right? They don't want to click a button. But you know, they will be weeded out, right? So, like, those people that won't click on the events tab for you, those are people that you probably don't even want at the event anyways. You know what I mean, right? And it's the same thing for us, where it's like, you know, Pusha T said it best, you know, if you know, you know. And that's kind of how we move, you know? It's like, we always say, our show, there's so much content about our show out there. There's so many videos. There's so many pictures. All you got to do is go to IGTV and look, or go to YouTube, Facebook. There's media everywhere. And, you know, it's, but we still even say, with that being said, we still say it's just better experienced than explained. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. if you can't get it from what we've already explained, then it's cool. But, you know, and then hopefully you get there from the best marketing tool ever, which is word of mouth, you know.
And the power's in the name. Once again, I mean, mm-hmm. you go to LA, you tap in, the first thing you want to do is go to Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles. You don't go to Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles not knowing what they serve. They serve chicken and waffles.
Yes.
They serve other stuff, but it's chicken and waffles.
Chicken and waffles.
Like, you know what I'm saying? It's in the name.
Yeah.
So, all right. So now we're going to go in depth as far as the business model of where you guys are at now, because mm-hmm. I think it's interesting. I think it's something that people can really learn a lot from. So that's what we're going to go into in the next segment. All right. So now we're going to go into the second segment. This is what EYL is known for and why everybody loves this. We're going to go deep into the business side of things, right? Mm-hmm. So you have a booming operation right now, right? So can we talk about the inner workings of how it looks? Because you said something interesting. You said, you know, you're integrated vertically. And that's something that you was always interested in. So a lot of times, well, people heard that, may have heard that for the first time with Nipsey. R.I.P. Nip, when he said, I'm integrated vertically. Y'all mm-hmm. blew it. And some people didn't fully understand what that means. So can you talk about what the vertical integration for you looks like?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so vertical integration is really just like owning the whole process of your relationship with your consumer, right? So for us, I'll break down sort of like how an artist normally would get paid from like a live show or a tour experience, and then I'll break down how we sort of attack that model and how vertical integration applies in a live space. So typically, a company, i.e. Let's just say first an artist wants to go on a tour. An artist has an agent. That agent then says, hey, this artist is going on tour, and they reach out to promoters to essentially buy maybe the whole tour, and it's just like promoted by one company or individual promoters in certain markets, right? And they buy into a tour and they give that artist a guarantee.
So that would be like an AEG or Live
Nation?
Yeah,
AEG or Live Nation is okay. The two big examples of this. And the agents are people like CAA, ICM, companies in that realm that represent the talent. So the agent says this artist fee is, let's just say, $20,000. So that artist shows up, performs, people buy tickets, and they get their $20,000 and they leave, right? Now, that's normal, but the thing that the artist doesn't benefit from with that is the consumer data, as well as things like the sales of concessions, and that's like food and bar revenue. So how we flip that idea on its head is we don't ask for a guarantee for people to come to our shows. We just rent the venues, assume all the risk for the venue rental, and then we pay the venue whatever the fee is, and then we control the ticketing. And when people buy the tickets from us, we retain that consumer data, and we're able to remarket and talk to those people, you know, the next time we come and do a show. The thing with an artist when they come in, you know, to a venue, if they want to come back, the only way that they can like stay in that same venue or move to a bigger venue is essentially if they're like hot, right? So you have to remain hot. You have to have songs on the radio. You have to, you know, be doing all this stuff on Instagram and social media. And with us, we don't have to have any of that. We just have to keep doing more shows essentially and build our consumer base. And that just adds to the amount of people that we are able to then notify the next time that we come to the city.
Yeah, that was like what you were saying earlier when you were getting the RSVPs. Mm-hmm. It was free, but the data was what you really wanted, because you Absolutely. Can collect it and tell people about the events that you're doing.
Yep.
Right? Now, on the what you're doing now is, and you said this in your article, was like when an artist is hot, it's easy to, you know, get booked for a show, but there's maybe 5-10 years when they're not. They don't have the clientele to even know who their audience is.
They don't even know who their audience is. Right. Exactly. Like they're using all these third-party tools, essentially, right? And, you know, we all know with Instagram, when you make a post, not every one of your followers is going to see that, right? And it's the same thing with an artist. When you sell, but it's even worse, right? Because, like, that's the most important people that you need to be able to communicate with. Why? Because those are the people that are literally paying you, right? Mm-hmm. They are the ones that are, that's an actual consumer versus just a follower, right? Somebody who's paid to go and see your show. You're telling me, like, if I'm an artist and I'm not able to talk to those people, that's insane to me. But but you give it up when you take a guarantee and you allow somebody else to assume the risk. But the thing is that, and here's the real catch is where, like, the more tickets that these large companies sell, right, they're businesses, right? They're just building their database. So now if they have 3 R&B artists that they've done shows with in the past, it's like they can just market the next R&B artist
to
because these people are interested in this, right? And they're just huge troughs of data, essentially. These large promoters. And, you know, but people just think that this is the only way that it can be done, because for so many years it's been done like this. And people haven't, like, the thing that's happened in music is we've seen a influx of people taking a stand and becoming independent on the recorded music side, right? And so a lot of these artists that you see that they're saying, like, I'm independent, you know, I don't want to sign a label deal, blah, blah, blah. Yes, they are independent on their, maybe on their recorded music, but please believe that the new record label is just like, you know, the Live Nations and the AEGs of the world. And like, they're still in these touring deals and they're not really independent when it comes to their live operation. And again, there's nothing, I'm not downplaying, you know, I'm not talking bad about the AEGs and Live Nations of the world by any means, but I think that true independence is being independent in every single
aspect. Especially if that's where most of the money's coming from. Like, they're not making as much money from the recording.
You're
making it from when you tour, right? So like, thinking of the long-term play where it's like, you know what? I could take this upfront money now, or long-term, I can get the data, and now I know my fan base going 10, 15, maybe 20 years, where I can still perform in these cities.
Absolutely.
The value is in the, I don't think people, I don't even want to brush over this because it's, I don't think people fully understand how valuable data is. Facebook just had the biggest settlement or fine in like the history of everything. And they'll take that because everybody knows what happened. They took your information, but that's how valuable your information is,
Google
right?
Too. So
it's a reason why when you sign up to all of these things, they ask for your date of birth, they ask where you live. They this is like solid gold, right? Because now they can market to you forever. Like, they can market to you forever. They know your likes. Now they can figure out what kind of music you listen to, what kind of clothes you wear. Every single thing that you, and it's like a lifetime as opposed to you going to a store and you buy candy, right? Now, the old way of doing business is to say, okay, you brought that candy. I need you to come into the store every week, every day for me to make money off of you, right? The new way is to say, okay, you brought that candy. But when you brought the candy, I made you fill out a form. So now I'm text messaging you pictures of chocolate bars throughout the day.
Soliciting you.
And you know what? Another point to make as you know, if any marketers are listening to this, right? Not just consumers, but it's like, because data is so valuable, you need to treat it as such. You need to treat it as a precious thing, and you can't overextend, you know, your welcome and your ability to market to people, right? Just because you have all this data, for instance, SMS with us is huge, right? Like, being able to text our fan base and let them know when tickets are on sale, that's a huge thing. But we don't send many text messages because it's intrusive, you know what I mean? And and if you send a text message to people, you know, too frequently, they will quickly unsubscribe from that, right? And the data that is so valuable and important will actually become meaningless if you abuse it. So, you know, this is the thing that people need to understand. Like, while data is valuable, it's very important not to abuse that data.
Yeah, and you don't have to guess, because like I said, now you can reach out to people, and as opposed to, they might not ever come back to your candy store, but that doesn't mean that they can't buy candy, right? They don't have to physically be there. Now they can order it over the mail, or they can order it online. They can do a lot of different things. So this is why data is so important. And if you think about it, it's something that you said to us off camera that made a lot of sense. Like, even in iTunes, like, you might stream a billion records. You don't know
who's
not one of those persons that actually brought it. Think about that. Like, Drake, probably, I think he broke the streaming record. How many records did he stream?
He did a billion in the first week.
How many of those people does he actually have relationships with?
Right.
Yeah.
Right? That's a billion. Like, that's crazy, right?
J. Cole said they're using computers, right?
Yeah.
Faking these streams.
Yeah.
Well, that's a different conversation. So it's like, I would rather actually have a million people or 100,000 people's information than 100 million people that I don't know.
It's the same thing, right, with us, right? Like, you know, I'm not going to share our, like, how many emails and phone numbers we have, right?
Yeah.
But I will say it's multiples times how many followers we have on Instagram.
That means more.
Way more. Yeah. Way more. We, like, this is why, you know, when, like, I said, we're kind of like sleeping giants, right? Because, like, we may have 50-something thousand followers on the R&B Only Instagram page, but, boy, when you look at that email and phone number list, you know, you'd be surprised. And that's essentially how we built our consumer, our relationship, and that's how we'll continue to grow, is by directly having a relationship versus having a relationship.
I think you coined the term own your audience.
Yeah, own your audience.
It was like you have that direct line of communication with the people who are coming.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, all right. And then as far as the monetary side, you guys put up all the financial risk. So you can talk about that. You can talk about that off camera too. That's a little different than the regular touring model.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, I mean, and it's a lot of risk, right? So, like, think about, like, I mean, certain venues that we play in, they may cost 10, 20, 30 grand to rent these venues, right? So imagine if you're doing a tour, right? Like, that's a lot of upfront capital. And with a lot of these companies that own the rooms, you don't have to put the whole money up front, but sometimes it's half, you know, or sometimes it's a quarter. And so when you're talking about 30 shows, average of $20,000 to $30,000 rentals. You know what I mean? Like, this can get to be a lot of upfront capital that's going out. And you have to plan these things way in advance, right? Sometimes 6 months, sometimes 18 months, depending on how big the show is and how the availability looks for something in a marketplace. Because I'm not just competing with, you know, people in like the R&B space, right? These are the venues that everybody tours in, right? So I'm competing with the rock acts that want to come and book shows there. I'm competing with the rap acts, the hip hop acts, the R&B acts, anybody that's in the live space. That's who I'm competing with in terms of like holds on venues. So, you know, you have to, it's a capital upfront business that you don't really see the money until it comes back. Because then here's another thing that happens. A lot of people are wait last minute to buy a ticket to a show. Like, think about the last time you all might have went to something, right? You might have said, oh, this thing is happening this weekend, so I'm going to get a ticket this weekend.
I mean, here in New York, it's like these guys, they know, like, when I get tickets, I'm like the first guy in line, because I know like things are going to sell out fast. Right? Yep. And then I can't do it.
That's interesting. So as far as to say, okay, you're a promoter, right? You're promoting your own events, but you're a promoter.
I wouldn't say we're a promoter, but that's another thing, right? Like, in terms of the vertical integration, it's like, we are the people that are actually like producing the event. We're the talent for the event. Mm-hmm. We also market the show. So that's an aspect, well, you know what I mean?
And you control tickets and admission.
Well, what I was going with that, as far as marketing, right? Yep. So promoting, marketing, however you want to phrase it, you put it out there for the public, right? Mm-hmm. What's the ratio that you look for? Okay, the first week I need to have 50% of the tickets sold.
That's a great question.
Going into it, I need to, like, when do you start to, like, this is looking a little shaky?
We might have to cancel this show. I mean, there's been a few shows canceled, man. Shout out to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina.
We love everybody in South Carolina.
Yeah. But y'all just got to buy tickets, man. So essentially, the way I can phrase it, because every place is different, right? Some places you go to, you might sell, you know, in the first day when it goes on sale, which is the most important day. It might sell, like, you know, you might sell 10% of the venue, you might sell 5% of the venue, but that show actually may be a sellout by the time doors open. Mm. You just, you know, it just depends. But I think if you do sell on sale, the term is on sale, right? Like, you have the way this works is you have an announce and you have an on sale. So typically we announce shows on a Monday and then we actually go on sale on a Friday. So it gives people that window to sort of like register for a pre-sale, and you incentivize people to buy tickets early. So when a ticket goes on sale, that's typically the cheapest price that ticket will be, and you're rewarding people for committing to the show early. And so the amount that I feel like, you know, any event producer would want to be at, maybe you're looking at, yeah, if you're at like 50%, that's great. You know what I mean? I feel like that's, when we do numbers like that, we know that.
Oh, 50% at what date? At
like first on day, the first, on sale. Like the first 48 hours. That's kind of how you know, like, the this show's on pace to sell out. You know what I mean? But yeah, then if you have a bad on sale, and we've had plenty of those before we like got good at marketing, you know, you might be at like 10%, 5%. And then you're like, wow, it's going to be an uphill battle to sell the rest of these tickets.
So 2016, right? Mm-hmm. R&B only, that's when it launches, right?
Yeah, that's when
How many shows, how many venues were you guys looking at in that first year?
In that year, we did, I think we did 30-something, maybe 35. And then in 2016, we probably did 20. And then the next year, we probably did in the 30s. And then last year, 2018, we did 67.
67, right?
Yeah. I think.
So can we talk? All right. So we talked about, as far as you guys, you put up the money yourself, right? Mm-hmm. So obviously it's more of a risk, but you get more reward also, right?
Definitely.
So as far as the revenue, what does your revenue look like different from others? Like, how, like, you get different parts that a regular person that's doing an event wouldn't get by not putting up?
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, I got to shout out Live Nation. They're huge. They're not investors in our company, but we work with them a lot. Mm-hmm. And we have a very unique and incredible relationship with them. And so, yeah, you know, we there's sometimes where we participate in bar revenue from certain venues, right? There's certain times where And that's just not just Live Nation, but that's just across the board. Some venues that that we're doing shows in. Sometimes we don't, right? Sometimes a venue might be so in demand that they know that they can sort of like offer this kind of deal and like not give you anything from the bar. Some venues we participate in parking, you know, concessions, which is food and beverage sales, as well as tickets, right?
Like, yeah, that's something that artists don't get, right?
Most of the time. They're not gonna get anything from parking. No. I mean, you the ones that do are probably like, you know, they're so big, like the Taylor Swifts of the world, maybe the Beyoncés of the world. Because it's something that a lot of artists, here's the thing, there are not many artists that are producing their own shows. Mm-hmm. There are not many artists that are putting up the capital to do a show. They're just getting a guarantee. You know what I mean? Okay. So like their agents are not even asking for some of these things.
I remember a few years ago, I think Beyonce did a deal with Pepsi. Mm-hmm. And they sponsored the entire tour. I think it was the Beyonce album. Okay. Yeah, when she was starting to do the baseball stadiums.
Yeah.
I think she had just did the Super Bowl. They sponsored that with her and Bruno Mars. And then they did the tour. So like, that's an example of where
they're
sponsoring the entire tour. Mm-hmm. So maybe she's like, I went to a few of her shows and it was like, people they forget about those calls. Like when you buy food at the venue, when you pay $40 to park at the venue,
like
all these things, including merch at the venue.
And a lot of times when artists do a merch deal and they're buying merch at a venue, typically the venue is taking some of that percentage, right? Usually it's anywhere between like 30 and 10%. That the venue's getting just to allow you to sell merch in there. Yeah. Which is another important reason why, you know, owning the data is important, right? Because if you have a store that you can sell online and you know these people have came to your show, but you had the data to talk to them and say, hey, if you didn't get merch at the show, you can get it online in my online store, and you're not having to pay a venue a certain cut of, you know, that money.
Brian Leslie has something. You familiar with what he's doing?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. With us. What's the phone app?
He actually reached out to me. We had communicated in DM. Shout out to him. But yeah, he has
Superphone, right?
He has something similar to that. So do you think that this is where we're headed as far as like everybody's on the wave of owning your masters and mm-hmm. being independent? That's pretty much established now, even mm-hmm. though a lot of people still don't own their masters, but at least that's kind of the narrative is out there, right? Mm-hmm. But not a lot of people are talking about this, what you're talking about, information, owning your data.
Mm-hmm.
You think that's like the next wave?
I hope it is, and I'm trying to be a person that champions that, right? And that like helps people do that. I mean, one thing that I want to start doing is producing tours for other artists, but using this model that we have, right? So like maybe it's we come in with, you know, or maybe it's not even a tour, right? Maybe it's just a festival or one show that we help an artist do, and so that they can see like, hey, instead of letting, you know, some other person do it, like we can share the data, you know what I mean? Like, and you can actually own the data that, you know, the 5,000 tickets you sell, it would be nice to like talk to those people again. You know what I mean? And like, you kind of have to do it in small steps to show people. Cause like a lot of people don't realize the importance of it right now. But here's another thing that it takes. The reason why we've seen this movement towards independence in music and recorded music is because the cost of creating the music has gone down so significantly, right? It still costs a lot of money to produce a show for 5,000 people or 2,000 people or 1,000 people, right? There's a lot of upfront costs that you have to put out. And that's the thing, like you can make a song for next to nothing right now. You can't produce a tour, let alone one event, for next to nothing, right? And so this is all a question of risk, right? Like I was just really willing to risk all of my personal capital because what I knew that the idea I had was going to work out, and I was so I just believed in the idea so much, and I was so passionate about this thing. But you know, a lot of people are not willing to bet on themselves when it comes to money. And that's what's going to, you know.
And the approach you took, you just kept flipping, right? Like from the first part, you just
flip.
The profit, put it back in, put the profit back in, then you just get
absolutely bigger. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, to this day, I still don't pay myself, you know, a salary. I pay my staff, you know, well before I take any money. And that's just, you know, I invest into office space. I invest into production. I invest into people. you know, I invest into, yeah, like talent, you know what I mean? And when I say talent, I don't mean just artists, right? I mean like employees and people who are going to help the operation grow. Because me taking money out and, you know, buying myself something nice, you know, money is, I look at money as like a tool, right? Like money is, they're like workers. Every dollar is like a little small worker that can build and turn into more dollars, mm-hmm. and turn into more opportunities. But you have to put those dollars to work. If you just are buying something like, you know, because you want to reward yourself, that doesn't necessarily, it's that value is just gone.
It's a missed opportunity. Yeah. It's all about mindset. Once you start to realize, once you start to look at money like that, you will never really want to buy nothing.
No,
like it's like, exactly. it's like once you really start to look at it like that, when you start to understand it like that, right? Because it's like, okay, I could buy this $30,000 Rolex, but that $30,000 Rolex is going to cost me $120,000. Like, you know what I'm saying? Because ultimately, that $30,000 could have got flipped four times.
Absolutely.
In 2 years or one year. So then you become, you got to be careful, because like I said, now you can get to a point where you don't never want to spend money, because it's like, I'm putting everything back in. But I wanted to ask you, one question also.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever get bank financing?
So I've always taken out like loans and stuff, right?
Bank loans.
Yeah. Well, not from traditional banks, but like more like startup company banks and stuff like that. And yeah, even now we have, you know, various loans and stuff. And we do have a deal with Live Nation that is, not it's financing, but it's just essentially a loan. It's like,
let me ask you a question, because this is something that we hadn't covered. I just thought about it, but mm-hmm. At what point were you able to get a bank loan or a line of credit? This is something that entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. it all comes down to funding. One of the reasons why a lot of businesses don't get off the ground, especially in our communities, that they don't have money. They can't fund probably. We're gonna talk about funding the next segment, but I want to talk about that right now. When were you able to secure a relationship with a bank to even get a loan? The first loan.
So, you know, it wasn't banks first. I was using my American Express card like a bank.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, so that is how, you know, I was building my credit on there, and I was just like, you know, using that 45-day window to like flip and make money. You know what I mean? So like once I started getting to a point where I needed like serious capital, I was just like, okay, we got to use this American Express, and like hopefully we have another event that happens, and then this money from this event will pay this American Express bill, and then to move forward and keep putting holds on venues, like, and that's it. And then the American Express, me being building the credit on there, was able to get me like other credit cards and that type of thing. So the way that I funded the business initially was capital from credit cards, and like paying those back as fast as I could, and then just the money that was being generated from the actual shows.
Yeah, you went from, I think, $500,000 in 2016 to $1.2 million in 2017, and then to $2.1 million in 2018.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just tremendous
growth. In revenues. Yeah.
But that was one of your models. It was like profit. Anything we're gonna get, we're reinvesting profit into product.
Yep.
And like that's a model that is like people should follow that, man.
Yeah, I think so. I think that you know, especially when something's working, I always tell my team, like, if something's working, let's pour the gasoline on it. You know what I mean? Right. Like let's make that little spark into a wildfire.
All money in, man.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So now we're gonna go into the last segment, and what everybody's waiting to hear. Why you turned down $1 million?
We gotta do a
sanity test on you. See if you pass it. But all right. So now we're gonna go into what everybody's been waiting to hear, right? So okay.
How could you?
So you built a company, yep. And correct if the numbers is wrong, but this is the research that we got. In 2016, the gross revenue was $150,000, right?
What year?
2016.
Yeah,
150.
Yeah, okay, 150.
And then 2017 we have 500,000.
Yes.
And then 2018 we have 2.1 million.
400% increase.
Yeah. So then at that point in time you're blowing up and you need help, right?
Definitely.
You need some financing outside of just flipping it. So you seek the help of venture capitalists, right?
Well, yes, they kind of reached out to me though.
Okay.
It was funny. I was talking to my agent, and you know, he was just like, "Hey, you know, what do we want to do for next year and stuff like that?" And this was in the early days with him, and he was just like, I was telling him, I need some money, man. You know what I mean?
But you were putting a lot of the profit into
I want to understand, because people hear you like 2.1 million, and for the average person that doesn't understand business, they don't know the difference between gross and net.
Oh, yeah.
And big like, difference. They think you balling out of control. Like, mm-hmm. why you need money? But 2.1 million, like you said, I mean, that might mean 100,000 when it's all said and done.
Yeah, when it's all said and done.
Right? Because you got to always put money back in this. You got to pay your employees. You got to book the. So that doesn't mean. Or you might even be at a loss. Billion dollar companies.
There have been plenty of shows where we've taken losses on, right? Like where there's been absolutely no profit.
Exactly. So, all right. So, okay. So, can you talk us through this VC experience?
Yeah. Okay. So, should we just start from the beginning?
Yeah.
Basically, you know, I needed some capital, and I was going to banks and mainly traditional lenders, and I just wasn't getting enough, right? So maybe I could get from like, you know, a loan shark essentially, like 200K here, 100K here, stuff like that. But they were at crazy interest rates too, you know. So once the kind of word got out that I needed some capital within, you know, a few people in the entertainment industry, people started to reach out, and I talked to this one company, and at first, you know, they loved the business model, right? Because they were a music company as well, and so they loved the business model, and they were like, this is something that, you know, we think we can, you know, help finance. And the initial offer, they had to give them my books, right? And they had to look into my financials and that type of stuff. So there were all kinds of like agreements signed, NDAs, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, when they looked, they said, okay, you know, we think $1 million would help this guy's company out, but we want to take this large percent for $1 million.
And you own 100% of the equity in the company.
Right now, I currently own 100% of Colors Worldwide, yes. And the company was... their initial offer was for 40% of the company at $1 million, and that would have put me at like a $2.1 million valuation, something like that. So initially, I was just like, "Okay, you're telling me that the company is at a $2.1 million valuation, and valuation just means how much your company is worth right now." Mm-hmm. But I was in that time frame, I was on pace to make two point something million, right? Yeah. So I was just like, usually to find the value of a company, there's a lot of different ways that it can be done, but usually you apply a multiple of revenues, because in an early stage company, you know that you're doing exactly, you know, what you said, right? Which is you're putting monies back in. So like revenue isn't important in the early stages because you're just trying to build audience, right? So you might apply a 3 or 4 times multiple. So for me, I'm looking like my company is at least worth $6 million. And I really think it's worth like, you know, $8 million. So those are the numbers. I was trying to get $1.5 million at an $8 million valuation, right? That's what I was like really looking for. And, you know, when they came in at the 40% mark, I think that they just thought that I was like a young kid, you know what I mean, who's just gonna like say, wow, here's $1 million, this could help me out a lot, and just like give up that much ownership of my company. So then that's where the negotiation process started. But what you also don't realize when you're talking about equity investment is that there's so many terms that you're gonna have to iron out, and this is going to be a very long process. So from when they offered me that to when I ultimately turned it down, it was a 5-month process. You know what I mean? It took a really long time. And I'll just, you know, I'll share some of the terms that, you know, were unfavorable and that I didn't really like. You know, one of those was there were thresholds essentially that would, you know, I could essentially not spend in the early days of negotiation. I think it was like anything over $50,000 has to get unanimous board approval. And for those that don't know, that's saying that, well, number one, we have to appoint a board to your company, right? And so the board would consist of me and then you know, representatives from their company. So like two other people. And to get any major decision done, you know, you would have to, everybody would have to say yes. Now, this is how normal companies work, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is not anything that's weird or new, but we're talking about a small amount of money in the grand scheme of things to me. You know what I mean? So I'm not looking to have unanimous board approval over spending something as nominal as $50,000 when I've already built this company to make 2.1 in gross revenue.
What's the point of asking people when you're already doing it yourself?
Exactly. Yeah. You know, so that was one of the issues that I had.
No.
Another issue was the vesting equity, right? So like, you know, there were stipulations in the agreement at certain points where it's like my equity would have to vest in the company, right? So like I would have to essentially earn back the equity that I already have, right? So I already own 100% of the company, but let's say if my, you know, equity went down to 60%, I would have to agree to work at the company for a certain amount of time to get that equity back, right? And my equity would vest over years. But again, this is something that is not unusual, but it is unusual for somebody who has already, this company is 5 years old, right? And I've already done this by myself. Mm-hmm. I'm not vesting equity in something that I've built from the ground up, you know?
At one point, they got the offer down to $1 million at 20%?
Yeah, uh-huh. And that, I mean, huge jump, right? Yeah. Like, huge jump. And that was because our revenues were literally coming in real time. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. This was happening at the end of 2018. And the revenues were going up, and they saw that, you know, we ended up being able to agree on that point. So then, you know, the deal was starting to look a little more favorable. But why I ultimately walked away from the deal was because the threshold limits, right? So it was like, I think it was $250,000 that if I spent anything over the $250,000, I would have to get unanimous board approval. And again, you know, I haven't spent over $250,000 at one time yet, right? But that's at my company's revenues being $2 million, right? Like, but what happens when my company's revenues are $10 million, you know, or $20 million at that? The money that the amounts of money that I spend on things, you know, if you would have asked me last year, you know, would you have spent, you know, over $1 million in, you know, Facebook advertising in 2 years, I would have been like, yeah, right. You know what I mean? Like on paid ad campaigns. But those are the numbers we're talking about. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and you know, in year spans. So now I'm just like, you know, I don't want to put myself in a position where when I want to do something, or let's say I want to buy a company, right? Like, let's say I want to get an equity stake in another company. And and the cost is going to be $300,000, $400,000, whatever, you know?
Yeah.
I don't want to be in a position where I'm having to ask for approval from other people that are, A, not even a part of the culture and know, you know, they might not know that this is an actual real opportunity because they are not a part of the culture. You know what I mean?
I'm thinking like, in my head right now, like, if an artist like Chris Brown is like, yeah, I'll do R&B only, it's going to cost you $350. Like, yeah. In your head or in my head, it's like, that's a no-brainer. We got to get him.
Yep.
But to ask people's approval, it's like...
It's like, yeah, they might not know. They might not understand, you know? And that's the thing that really, you know, made me walk away. But why I was considering it so much was because I had real situations. I had real overhead. I have real employees that have to provide for themselves. They have, you know, themselves to feed. They might have families to feed. They might, you know what I mean? So this is why I was considering taking a deal like that. Even though it sort of went against my principles, I knew that what was more important for me was that I need to pay my staff to be able to continue to make this thing move and operate. So I thought about it long and hard, and you know, they were still trying to work out the deal. And then what happened was, you know, I just knew that it wasn't right. And I just said, you know, I'm gonna walk away from this. But what I want to do, I wanna turn lemonade out of lemons and not just have this be something that is behind closed doors and that, you know, only I know about, only my team knows about. And I wanted to help and share with other people, look, this is something that you guys need to know. You know what I mean? Like, this is something that the up and coming entrepreneur needs to know when building a business and when running into a situation where you feel like you're going to need capital. Just know that these are things that you're going to have to consider, right? And I wanted to really like explain to people what, you know, that these things are normal. But again, it just wasn't something that I was comfortable with because I had, it would be normal if I was starting this company with these people, mm-hmm. but I had already built this company and then these terms were coming into play. And then at the same time, you know, it was a way that like I wrote this article about my experience and that it kind of went, you know, semi-viral and it was a way for the world to know that, hey, this is a company that maybe I didn't know about, but maybe this is a good investment opportunity. You know what I mean? Or maybe like I could open up another door with sponsorship or something like that. And just let people know about sort of like the business that we were doing. And yeah, you know, and the article kind of took off and we ended up getting a loan actually from another company. And also in the midst of like a bunch of other, you know, potential sponsorship things, even right now, right? Like we actually just got our first sponsor for an upcoming show. We did a deal with a mobile banking app that actually helps, you know, young people with the banking system. You know what I mean? That's like kind of broken right now and like charging a lot of fees for stuff. We've did a partnership with them where we're encouraging people in our audience to use this mobile banking system. And they don't have to pay overdraft fees. You know, they can actually get paychecks if they're working in the gig economy, you know, Uber, Lyft, or at a restaurant where they're picking up shifts. This company actually pays their paychecks 2 days faster, stuff like that. Mm. You know what I mean? So
now the thing I like about the article that you wrote. So you wrote the article when you decided to turn down $1 million, you wrote the article, mm-hmm. but you wrote it, right? And
yeah.
you put it on Twitter and the media just took it from there and they yep. just meet different media outlets start to pick it up. So I say that to say, cause recently happened, shout out to, I think is the brother's name is Najee, young gentleman from Philly. And he wrote something on Instagram. He like wrote an article himself about himself. And mm-hmm. it was like four friends that like saved $50 a week for 2 years. And then they brought their first investment property. They all like in their 20s.
Wow.
And he wrote like a eye-catching caption on it, like four friends saved money for 2 years and bought an investment property. And then like all of these blogs on social media started to pick it up. And then I posted it and it got like a lot of views. Like I think it got like 6,000 likes. And we actually spoke. But I say that to say, a lot of times people complain about not getting press, but we're in the day and age now where you could create your own press.
Absolutely.
Right. So yeah. you made that article and that's the reason why you're here now, because somebody sent me that and was like, get them on the podcast. And I'm like, reached out. So it's like, I think that that's brilliant. Whereas you had a story, that's an interesting story, right? As opposed to trying to just pitch it to a million different publications and then waiting to see who picks it up. You put it out yourself. It went viral and then publications picked it up.
Yeah.
From there, you got a whole bunch of opportunities because now it was great promotion.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also education as well. Cause like you were saying to us, even with like, you know, just, but you use the example of black women that graduate at higher rate than anybody else. Right. But you know, they're starting businesses, but they're getting funding at a lower rate than anybody else.
The lowest rate. Let's be clear. Black women are getting venture capital at the lowest rate. They're getting the smallest amount of venture capital of anybody getting venture capital in this country right now, but they are graduating. They are the most educated. They're graduating college in our country at the highest rate. That's bananas to me. That doesn't make any sense. And it's like, I wanted that article. And for those that you know, are listening, you can just Google why I turned down $1 million, Jabari, or, you know, just honestly, if you just Google why I turned down $1 million, it's the first thing that'll pop up. But I wrote it on Medium and, you know, I wanted like those people, those type of people to read this thing, right? Like the up and coming entrepreneurs that look like us to understand the pitfalls and the things that you should be like, even just if you are like some people just needed to get a introduction to what terms like valuation mean, or what terms like equity mean,
or what a venture capitalist
is. What a venture capitalist even is, right? So it's just that, you know, and it may take you 20 minutes to read the article, but I guarantee you that you'll walk away from the article with some information that you might not have known before. And you know, I tried to make it entertaining. I put jokes in there and stuff like that, but it's just like, it's informative. And I think that that's the main thing. It's like right now we are using so much of our time to entertain us, but how much of our time is actually informing us when we're spending hours on these social media platforms, you know?
Yeah.
And that was the whole goal with like, with the article, is just trying to inform us.
No, I appreciate that. Yeah. So, all right. So what's next? What's next for Colors and R&B Only?
Oh man, so huge, huge recent announcement is we just announced our first R&B Only Music Festival. So for anybody that's in Orlando, Florida, honestly, for everybody in America and abroad, out, you know, fly in, man. So, you know, like we said, our show is primarily a DJ-based show, and sometimes we have guest artists pop out. We've had people like Jacquees, Keisha Cole, Omarion. We've had a lot of R&B stars, Tank, perform at our shows. And now this is the first time where we've announced artists that are actually going to be there and they're performing. It's an outdoor venue. We're going to have food trucks. We're going to have, actually, I never haven't announced this yet, but this is a Earn Your Leisure exclusive.
Yeah,
we actually have two helicopters that are going to be at this show, where you can take helicopter rides and fly above the festival and like take pictures and stuff
real
like that.
Big.
Yeah, it's going to be, you know, crazy. It's at the this place in Orlando called the Orlando Amphitheater. And yeah, I mean, tickets are selling fast, so we really, you know, hope you guys
you got some
come
big names
through.
Coming, right?
Yeah, yeah, Ashanti, Queen Naija, and a new R&B artist by the name of YK Osiris, who has like a top Billboard hit right now. It's called Worth It.
Yeah,
it's like I would give.
He's on the cover of XXL.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Freshman, freshman 10.
You just gotta be worth it. I'm not an R&B singer, but you know, a lot of times when you sing the song, people know what you're talking about. But yeah, he's a freshman this year on XXL, the only R&B artist on the freshman list. And yeah, it's that's gonna be huge for us. We also have another show with Ashanti and another up and coming R&B artist by the name of Kiana Lede this Friday. By the time they hear this, it might be over. But in DC, but yeah, the music festival.
So
is
Ashanti's
the biggest
on two
thing.
Gigs.
Yeah, Ashanti's on two gigs with us.
Ashanti
yeah.
was on my wall. Yeah, in 2004.
Yeah, yeah.
Shout out to Ashanti.
But yeah, if you go to rnbonly.com/Orlando or just find us on Instagram at rnbonly, the letter N. You know, that's where all the info is, man. And you know, you can see past shows, what we have going on in the future. But yeah, so that's huge for us in terms of the show elements. We also have, you know, a bunch of shows where we're DJing, and we just like our current team. Like we have Miami coming up, we have Sacramento, we have a big show in LA coming up. That's kind of like a farewell to LA, because we're taking a break until we do another music festival in Los Angeles. And then, yeah, merch, new merch is coming. We have media coming. We have a bunch of shows that we're working on that would be like digital shows in the R&B space. We're really trying to own R&B. So we want anybody who knows about R&B music in the genre, we want R&B Only to be synonymous with that. And not just a live event, but also content, also, you know, audio content, you know, music. Like we eventually we want to start putting out compilations, right? So remember back in the days, like Rough Riders Volume 1, 2, and 3,
man.
We want to do that for R&B, like R&B Only Volume 1, 2, and 3.
That's like the
type of thing.
Remember those commercials where they had the R&B, like the CDs, it would be like 30 songs.
Oh yeah, 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 exactly. Like so like that, but just like, you know, now for today's consumer, right?
Yeah.
So like stuff that would be on Spotify, Apple Music, that type of stuff. But yeah, just really being the curators and purveyors of R&B music. We even signed an R&B artist, you know, his name is Will Wildfire. So he's been like opening up shows for us. Go check him out too.
Yeah, that's
incredible.
A good look for a new artist.
Yeah, for a new artist, right? Like he's able to like get in front of this huge audience that we have around the nation, you know. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff coming, even and that's just on the R&B only front, right? But as Colors grows, we're going to start producing other events and live shows in other verticals that were underserved. We thought R&B was a huge underserved market. And so, you know, we're looking in places where, you know, there's other opportunities, right? So maybe it's food, maybe it's Latin music, maybe it's, you know, certain things in the beauty category. But
we touch the comedy space too, right?
Comedy, yep. Comedy, we got a lot more stuff happening in comedy in the near future, 2020. Yeah, so, you know, even if people have events, right? Like, I'm even interested in if there are certain events that are happening right now and that need help and that are looking to grow and expand and, you know, have the potential for a national footprint. I'm interested in potential partnerships, you know what I mean? And putting those events under the Colors umbrella, and helping expand, you know, and do partnerships with people as well. So that's something that, you know, we're looking at as well.
That's done. What's your Instagram?
So my Instagram is Jabari. It's simple. J-A-B-A-R-I. It's just my name. Sometimes I say just Jabari, and then people be like, oh, it's just like J-U-S-T. No, it's just my name, Jabari. And then the R&B Only Instagram is at R&B Only. And the Colors Worldwide Instagram, that's the parent company that owns R&B Only, is just Colors Worldwide. So pretty simple for all those.
Keep it simple,
guys. All right.
Jabari busy, man.
Troy.
Yeah. Shout out to everybody on Patreon.com. / Earn Your Leisure, you know, that is our proud to pay program. We've had a lot of supporters, you know, that have come on there, got advice from us, had conversations with us. I want to give a shout out to Terry. He's one of our older patrons. He actually did a video shouting us out in Oakland. So shout out to everybody in the Bay. Shout out to Terry. And like I said, every episode, it's a 5-tier program. You can join at any level, and we're gonna provide information to you either way. There's some bonus content on there as well. You get a chance to get the podcast, you know, a few days earlier, obviously with no ads, and bonus features. So keep logging on to that. Our merch is up on earnyourleisure.com. We have some new merch that's coming up as well as some few initiatives that we're going to be launching in the very near future.
Yeah, for sure. And then once again, as I said previously, my calendar is on earnyourleisure.com as well. So a lot of time people ask me, everybody knows I'm a financial advisor at this point, so you have questions, you got inheritance, you want to roll over an old 401k from a job, you want to invest, you can feel free to book a 30-minute free consultation. My calendar is on earnyourleisure.com. And as Troy said, we'll also be rolling out some very exciting things that we're excited about very soon. My book tip of the week was a gift from Jabari to us. It's called Ego is the Enemy by Ryan Holiday. So we talked about it off camera as far as a lot of times ego is the enemy in everything.
Oh, yeah.
Business, relationships, all kinds of stuff. Ego can lead you to make very bad decisions, and your pride can put you in very bad spots. So mastering your ego, understanding your ego is extremely important. So that is the book tip of the week. Check it out for sure. And thank you guys for rocking with us. We'll see you next week. Peace.
Peace.
Appreciate it.